And the crew is really scared because they don't know where anybody is, and they're lost, and they're, you know, they have no way of getting out.
An exposed situation.
Yeah, they're in a little bunch of trees. So I said, I'll tell you, I'll sit on the front, and I'll hang on to this bloody gun, and I said, don't shoot. And then I said, we're going to take it, we're going to run to get off this place. And I said, they're going to start firing as soon as we break into the open. So I said, when I say this way, you go that way, you know, just... You can't hit a moving thing anyway, at least a lot harder. And so we came out of this thing. I'll tell you, there were two big gouges came into the ground where they missed us. You follow me?
Yeah.
They shot and we were turning and you could see the like
the gouge in the ground with a shell going
underneath. Oh, that's a pretty scary sight.
Yeah.
And this driver has got her going fast. And we got our cloud of dust going. You can't believe it. And we just ran over the top of the next hill and now we're in where the rest are. And so we sat there, and I went over to Ned, and I said, "We got the I got the tank in, so everything's okay." And we're sitting there, and Al Halfpenny's standing over the I.O. Nobody knows, and you know, Al Halfpenny can think of as putting the guy under charge who made the cloud of dust. He said, "Go replace that officer that brought that tank in under charge. We're bringing this guy from over." I said, "Go back and tell him to go, you know, stick it up his ass." I said, I went out and I brought the tank back with the crew were all safe. And, you know, I'm not this slightest bit interested.
That's kind of a peacetime,
that's right.
Coast kind of move, isn't
that's right.
Yeah.
Stu.
Yeah.
Well, that was Bill, you know?
Yeah.
He wouldn't come over himself. And he didn't do anything about it, you know, that was it. It was all dead. But, you know, his action was to, you know, put the man under charge.
Silly sort of response.
Yeah.
I guess about this time he was elevated to brigade level. Why was that, do you think? Out of merit, or was it just...
I think he was the senior of the three.
Yeah. So Kitching just elevated him up. And who replaced him at that point?
A fellow named Hannon.
Hannon?
Doug Hannon.
Was he a...
He was the 2IC of our unit.
Was he good?
Yeah, he would have been, a real good... CO.
You say would have. Was he replaced? Or
I can't remember. He got hurt. I don't know if he got wounded or something happened to him. But I know he went. He was evacuated. You know, but he was either injured or hurt or wounded or something. As I remember.
And he wasn't there long?
No.
I guess wrapping up, the first totalized ended in, 16, 17 of August? How, by this time, I assume that casualties were fairly heavy. You had suffered quite a few. What sort of percentage of your tanks?
I just saw, I should give you, I got a bunch of stuff at home. Funny, you called the other night, and my wife got out a scrapbook that my mother kept during the war. And, you know, a lot of the newspapers and the various clippings and what have you, and there's one in there saying that we lost, the unit lost 122 tanks.
The Canadian Grenadiers.
Grenadiers, yeah. So your strength in tanks was about, say, 55. So literally, you know, we lost twice as many as we started. That'll give you an idea of casualties in tanks. And it had a breakdown, the number that went up in mines and so on. It's kind of interesting. I've never seen it before.
Yeah, phenomenal rate. How were you replenished? Was there a depot behind the lines that just kept sending tanks up? Were they fairly good at it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like, a new tank coming into service with an old crew, I guess?
They just stepped on her and just like stepping into a car and loaded her up with ammunition and gas and let's go.
Yeah. How about crews, though? When you needed a new crew, you had...
Oh, the crews are coming up all the time, too.
Yeah.
How replacements, they bring up the tank, you get a, you know, the crew and the tank would all kind of arrive as one.
But I take it a lot of old
your
crews are still alive.
Oh, sure.
You wouldn't lose them all.
No way. No. Some of them, you know, were wounded and so on. And, but let's say the tank went back and the tank would break or something and you'd send the driver and the co-driver back. Or you'd be going forward and they'd catch up to you. Kind of, yeah, whichever way you want to look at. And they'd pick up a new tank and drive it back up and then the crew would go on. You know, it was quite flexible.
Yeah. So how did the new crews work into with the veterans? Because these are all green.
No problem.
No problem at all.
Nobody ever even thought of it, you know.
But just sort of a natural recurrence.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're waiting to get up, and some guys are waiting to get up.
It was a heavy turnover, I guess, in personnel.
I don't think it was heavy. I can't really
recall.
We never short of people. Let's put that way. We never short of crews. Or maybe for a day or so, but they were replaced very quickly.
There was something rather interesting I saw in the history. You had something called LOB, left off battle.
Yeah.
In which an officer or a couple.
Two IC of your squadron be left out.
Yeah.
Two IC of the unit supposedly was left out.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea being, you know, that you had an immediate replacement.
Well, once in one battle, during Tractable, which was next one after Totalized, Halfpenny was listed as LOB, and that to me sounded awfully strange that the CO would be LOB from his regiment, and that a Major Hamilton took over.
Hamilton, that's the guy I'm thinking of, not Hannah. Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Hamilton took over.
Yeah.
And he got wounded that day. I'm sure. I just can't remember, but he took over. That day, which was just as well.
Yeah.
So that was that's the wildest day of my life, I think, looking back.
It is.
Oh, that was great.
Tell me about it.
Well, that's, the concept of the charge of the Light Brigade, I think, shows it off best, and they, finally, they did what I think they should have been doing from the beginning, and that is they took our brigade and the 2nd Armored Brigade, and you literally lined them all up.
Mm-hmm. And said go.
They had two regiments up and one behind, or we had every squadron up, they're just lined up in a bloody great big line.
Nothing in reserve?
Nothing.
Because normal procedure to have like two troops forward, one to the rear, right?
But you gotta believe what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So they lined them all up. Sure, you're lined on the ground that way. That's fine. And then at 12 o'clock noon, they sent over, and I think there were something like 1,000 bloody bombers went over.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, this is something, that all went wrong that day. They came up, and I'd say we're having our O group 30 minutes before the thing takes place.
Mm-hmm.
There is no time. I never had time when I went to Halfpenny's O group thing to go back and to have time to explain to the troop commanders what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Other than to tell them, there's a hell of a pile of planes going to go over here, within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, all you got to remember, really, here's the map. And they had maps, Christ, and the map this time, they overlap like this. You went off this map onto this one. And here you got a guy, and you're trying to show him this way, and he's going to go, and he's going to go to war, and you think he's going to go on a map reading exercise?
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't got time to look at the map if he wants to live. So they all get us lined up, and the bombers go over. They got a self-propelled, armored carriers.
Mm-hmm.
Battalion of infantry in those. They got SP guns are coming behind. Now there is a real
armored force.
And you just say at 12 noon, go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God, then the confusion starts. Nobody gone forward like to reconnoiter, to see even in the dark. And we went forward, I don't think we went 100 yards, maybe 200 at most, and there's a sunken road. No, we saw the road was there. So you kind of go down like this, and you have to pump. Well, there are anti-tank guns right there. That was pretty exciting, I'll tell you. And so we got through there. We lost a few tanks going through there. Now there's confusion. There is dust. The sun, you can't see the sun because it's up in the... It's like a big orange ball up in the dust because the planes have gone over and they bombed everything and anything. I don't know where they bombed, really, but I think they were where they're supposed to bomb. And we just took off.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 400 yards, there's lots of bombs and lots of, casualties are going to happen there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had an FO arrived up, and I didn't even have time to tell him. I said, the only thing I can tell you, is to follow me, and if we get to the other end, I'll lead the way. And he didn't last 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. They just happened to hit his tank, but they could have hit mine as far as I go. And we started through there, and God, then we get into a big field. And the tanks all got buggered up because they had like copses of trees, and then they have open areas. You follow me?
And there would be anti-tanks up in.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So now you got your funnel through the hole,
Mm-hmm.
And but there are so many coming.
You had to keep going.
Well, I'd say you're an anti-tank gunner. You can't load that thing. Don't forget, he's shooting at you. Or he's just laying down a hail of bullets. Mm-hmm. And that's enough to put a guy off his breakfast. And they're coming at you to beat hell. And you knock out one, and you knock out five. Don't forget there's 250 more coming.
Yeah.
And then they hit through this. Now the Germans running everywhere. They're running across the field, and they're running in greatcoats. Christ, it's in the middle of the summer, and they all got their greatcoats on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's midday. I don't know why they had their coats on, but they did. And that day, we could have gone to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do they do?
Stop, yeah.
First of all, they get all the confusion of supreme. I'm on the left-hand boundary of the whole thing as it turned out.
Yeah.
I'm over the boundary line. I'm lost, too.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we go through a village, and we get up behind it, and there's some guns up there that which we destroyed. And then Amy came up another way. He was lost. I fired off a very light.
Mm-hmm.
I've always kidded him ever since, you know, like, because he can't read a map for the dam. And I said, Jesus, if I had him in there, he'd have been lost forever. And he saw the very light, and he came over. But we went a couple miles further, and then they stopped all night.
Mm-hmm.
And just waited.
And those were your orders, to sit there and wait?
Well, we were told to stop, finally. And so you sit there all night, and the Germans, you can hear the trucks, you can hear them pulling out, you can hear them talking.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting ready for the tomorrow. Of all the, you know, dopey things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, who issued those orders, did you know?
It comes from Brigade.
Yeah. So Halfany again.
Yeah, and even once. See, all he's... Somebody told him, go and take that objective. Well, then you take the objective, you know, what should you do? Exploit it? Or sit there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say you should exploit it and go, you know... Well,
did you have the means to exploit it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. How about fuel and ammunition? Were you low?
God, we'd only gone about 5 miles and the things will go...
130, 140?
Yeah. Well, you burn up a lot of gas. You certainly could have gone another 20 miles. Nobody had even thought about the thing. And once you're through that hardcore, there's nothing behind you except trucks.
Underbelly. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, when they work all night, there's going to be a few guns there in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know where you are.
That's right. Yeah, and they've realigned their defenses accordingly.
Sure, they know they've got to stop you. They can't let you go in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So what happened in the morning after? I guess they had planned an attack for dawn again.
No, they didn't do anything the next morning. I can't really remember. But there was nothing starting to happen the next day.
Mm-hmm.
There was no orders really to go on or for a real advance after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of they regrouped again, I guess. I just can't remember what took place.
Do you remember much about the advance to Falais and then further on to Tron?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything about that? I remember reading something about you crossing the Lays River?
Lays on River.
Across this bridge.
That's where I went across there, in that little town.
Yeah.
Wherever it was. I don't know where it was.
Yeah.
We were the first people through the town, and there was nobody in it.
Mm-hmm.
It hadn't been damaged at all. I guess the inhabitants were down in the basement. I don't know where the hell they were.
Yeah.
And we drove through there, and we had all kinds of funny things, but we... came up behind a battery of 88 guns, 88 millimeter guns.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, you know, luck. If you'd come up on the front side of them, you'd have been destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
We just happened to go around the hill the wrong way. And they were all facing this way, and we came over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, it was mayhem for a while. But,
Do you adhere to the principle of luck? Do you think that luck plays a great... Or do you attribute it to something else? Skill, God, anything?
I think first of all, you know, your native intelligence and your training plays a big part in it, but there's got to be luck in it. I just don't believe it can be anything. I mean, what takes you around the hill one way and you could have gone around the other hill?
And why you're killed and why someone else isn't?
That's right. I can't believe it. It's just, I'm a fatalist from the word go anyway. And
mm-hmm.
So
if you're not going to be killed, nothing is going to kill you.
Well, literally, but don't do something stupid. I mean, God doesn't want you to take you. You know, don't make it obvious. He'll stop the game.
He'll change the rules.
That's
you.
Right.
Yeah.
Move the goalposts. So, I can't remember too much, but we were in there at the lake. That was, I just say, you know, if you can imagine yourself being about 24 and being on a charge like that, it was wild.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely
wild.
Yeah. Running and, you know, tanks on fire and people firing and...
The noise must have been atrocious, the sound of that.
Yeah, well, you know, you've got earphones on, so it's no more, the noise doesn't bother you because, you know, the engine is running and your gun is firing and you become oblivious to that. I mean, you don't even think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, various things happen to you and so on that, you know, makes it awful exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We were up there in the, you know, this is just before Ned came on the blower and there was another tank and myself side by side. And we were standing there and waiting again for somebody to tell us where you want us to go. We're on the objective. Now what the hell do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And, God, we looked about 100 yards away and there were three Germans wheeling out a 75mm anti-tank gun out of some trees. And they get it in position. And the two of them left, ran back. So you know that the one guy now is laying the gun, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to fire. And there are two of us. And I remember, you know, and this is, you know, in the confusion, you're trying to tell, you know, your gunner where this thing is, and we weren't quite facing the right way. So the tank is traversing its guns to get on him, and you know that he's also laying the gun on you or the guy beside.
And their guns probably more accurate, aren't
they? Oh, God. And this gun, the tank beside me fired, and he hit the thing dead center. You can't believe it. There was nobody there when we got there except a smoking mass.
Mm-hmm. A hole in the ground.
And so we never did know. I remember looking over this guy, he was a corporal. He was a corporal crew commander. I remember I waved at him, I said, nice, nice. I don't know who was going to get it, but we sure would have, he would have nailed one of us.
Yeah.
And it's a question of which one he was going to get. So you have those kind of exciting things. And, you know, numerous things like that happen.
But I guess the fighting bogged down on the way to Tron and that area, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And at that time, would you have been, had to face with us the piecemeal tactics again?
Sure. They got back this, sending squadrons out, and that never seemed to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Italy, they did it. It had to be done there on account of the terrain. But to see it in Europe and so on, in those wide open areas, you'd have thought with the power that they had, you know, it's hard to say the Germans had an armored division or two of them or something else. What the hell? We had about six.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to run into them. They're trying to keep out of your way, too. Because that's not the name of the game, is to put those head to head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to put it somewhere where there are no tanks. That's when a tank is really at its best. He doesn't want to just have a tank war going on.
And if you're in a Sherman and you're up against a Tiger, you're not going to stand much of a chance.
Well, that's stupid too, because, you know, they're better armed and so on, but they're a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
But
did you have many tank versus tank confrontations, or was it mostly tank versus anti-tank?
I'd say you had the tank versus tank and so on, but it never got like to be a big tank battle as such.
It was more like one-on-one, three-on-one.
Yeah, you know, that kind of a thing. Other than that big flays run, well, that was the way to me, because then you're through.
Yeah.
You're, you know, what's through there? And that's when a tank should be used, not to fight tanks.
Mm-hmm.
He's to go where there aren't tanks, and then think of the mayhem he could
create.
God, yeah. Christ, what's a truck going to do with it? You know?
One shell and a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can do anything.
You would think they could have just pushed the Americans on one side and the Brits, Canadians on the other, right in close fillet easily with that sort of that juggernaut, but they didn't.
But this... You know, they're waiting to get all the guns lined up, and then they have these, you know, attack with the infantry and so on. I just think with the amount of armor they had that they could have concentrated them and, you know, really given them a hammer treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And because our tanks would run, mileage-wise, a lot further than a German tank,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, they once you got in behind, where are they going to go?
Yeah.
And I just think it would have been fun. One time we were bombed by we were bombed by the American Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you there when it actually happened?
Oh, it happened. I'll tell you, our tank half rolled back into the hole. They dropped a 500-pound or 1,000-pound bomb right behind us, and our tank just slowly drifted into the hole. But we only had one casualty, and one guy panicked out of this thing. And a crew commander, and they couldn't see us. Once they dropped the first bomb, there was so much dust blew up that they just bombed into the dust. And as it happened, they didn't hit. There was no direct hit. The tank that I was in was close as any of them.
Mm-hmm.
and because the damn thing rolled back into the hole, so you got to be awful close. Mm. And but this guy got out and started to run, and the concussion killed him. There wasn't a mark on him.
He stayed inside his tank.
Stayed in the tank. Concussion won't hurt you inside the tank.
No, because that takes the shock up.
That's right.
Yeah.
But once he got outside, you know, they just no good.
How are you doing for time, by the way?
I think I've got to get on. I've got to have a meeting here with some people.
Okay, well, press me, cut it off, and I can come into you again.